Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, this is Money Talking. I'm Charlie Herman.
I have come here to bury the last remnant of the Cold War in the Americas.
This week, President Obama became the first president to visit Cuba in more than 80 years.
I have come here to extend the hand of friendship to the Cuban people.
And joining him on this historic trip,
there are a lot of CEOs, American CEOs, that have tagged along, very eager to start doing business in Cuba.
Something that is already happening.
Carnival Cruise Lines just announced it will begin sailing to the island nation in May. And Airbnb will help Americans find places to stay once they get to Cuba.
The race is on to give Cuba a Silicon Valley upgrade.
All of this is pretty amazing when you consider that it was just over a year ago that the president announced the changes in U.S. policies towards Cuba. So despite the fact that the embargo is still technically in place, is the race now on for which businesses and which of your friends is going to get to Cuba first? Well, joining me are Cardiff Garcia with the Financial Times, who has been there recently, and Emily Parker, an author and journalist who has written about internet activists in Cuba, China, and Russia. And Cardiff, starting with you, how much did this trip actually accomplish? Was it actual substance or just a photo op?
No, it was more than symbolic, especially if you look at what happened in the week leading up to the trip. First of all, the remaining bans on traveling to Cuba for Americans were significantly eroded. It used to be that if you wanted to visit Cuba for what's called educational people-to-people reasons, you had to go with a tour group that was approved by the government. Now you can go by yourself, and you can essentially just keep the receipts from the museums and restaurants you visit in case down the line, and this probably won't happen, you get stopped by a customs agent or the Treasury Department or whatever. You can justify that you went there for educational reasons. This is actually a pretty big deal, and I think it is going to lead to a lot more Americans going there because in the past, these tour groups that you had to go with were kind of a boondoggle and you had to follow their schedule. So essentially now you can visit Cuba, and in a way that is tourism in all but name. But there were also other things that happened, right? Cuba eliminated its 10% Yankee tax, as it was known, which is to say that when you visited Cuba and you brought U.S. dollars into the country, you had to pay an extra 10% tax. You don't have to do that anymore. And in addition to all of that, as you just noted, a number of businesses also signed deals to do business in Cuba, although the details are still a little bit sketchy. But this was more than just a symbolic trip, although, of course, the symbolism was very powerful.
Emily, how does Cuba square this economic liberalization with also trying to maintain political control in the country?
So that's really the million-dollar question, because on the one hand, Cuba really wants to reap the economic benefits of the internet, for example. But at the same time, I would imagine that authorities are quite fearful of letting go of control over the flow of information. So I think that's going to be the real question for Cuba going forward, because when you give citizens more internet and more connectivity, you're also potentially relinquishing control. So my guess is that Cuba will probably look toward China, because China is a country that has managed to give hundreds of millions of citizens internet access, but at the same time, keep control over the flow of information.
So cruise ship deals and hotel deals, a lot of tourism and a lot for people like Americans to go there. But what does it mean for actual Cubans? Does it benefit them, or is it more of a benefit for the government?
It will benefit some Cubans for sure, and it will also benefit the government for sure, right? That's kind of the trade-off right now. So the parts of the Cuban economy that do allow for some private sector activity are the ones that are tourist-facing, right? So bed and breakfasts, privately run restaurants, taxi drivers, right? These aren't exactly dynamic or high productivity sectors, but at least the tourism dollars that flow to them, they get to keep. And that's significant, right? So yes, the government absolutely will capture some of the new wealth. There's no way to stop that, I think. But this definitely is going to benefit a certain class of Cubans.
Emily, there was also an announcement from Google, a little bit vague, but that it's going to increase and improve internet access. Is that going to really have a fundamental change on how Cuba works?
Well, we don't really know the details of the Google deal yet. In recent months, we've seen greater connectivity in Cuba. So when I was reporting my book, Now I Know Who My Comrades Are, I was struck by the lack of connectivity in Cuba. I think it's a fact that many Americans don't appreciate how few Cubans are actually online. And this is something that Obama has announced is going to change, and it seems like Cuba is ripe for change in this area. But again, internet access is not the same thing as internet freedom. So it's possible that more Cubans will come online. What we don't know is to what extent Cuban authorities will try to control what they see and what they say over the internet.
Cardiff, part of the lure of Cuba is that it's novel, that people haven't been able to go there, businesses haven't been able to do business down there. Is there a point, though, where people might say, this is just too complicated, that you could see a decline in investment and a decline in tourism?
It's possible that the initial wave of tourism might not be sustainable after the first few years. Cuba still does have a really quite unique aesthetic, and this is another area where there are big trade-offs. So on the one hand, yes, it's interesting for people from the developed world to visit Cuba and see the old crumbling buildings and the 1950s cars and everything, but remember that those things are there because Cuba is a long-running economic catastrophe. And so it's true that as tourists come, they might change Cuba, right? It might get to a new look. But I think that's a good thing, and that's the kind of thing that is going to benefit Cubans. So if people should stop thinking in terms of, I want to see Cuba before it changes, they should start thinking in terms of, I want to be part of the positive incremental change that's going to take place in Cuba, and I can do that by visiting and by spending tourism dollars.
Emily, I'm wondering, how fast do you think economic change will come to Cuba?
Well, the problem is that there's still a lot of uncertainty. So there's, even though Obama has said that the embargo is going to end, there's some uncertainty about what will happen with the election. I think there's some uncertainty in the United States among U.S. businesses about exactly what the embargo allows and does not allow. And so that could have a dampening effect on investment. There's some uncertainty about what will happen with the internet. I think it's notable that some of these big companies, Airbnb, Netflix, these are companies that rely on the internet. And so if internet access does not become better in Cuba, and if speed does not become faster, then it's not going to be good for those companies.
I think people need to keep in mind that the restrictions that still apply throughout most of the Cuban economy and Cuban society are incredibly severe, and they still also apply to foreign investment. Cuba itself is going to have to loosen up a lot of these policies if it does want to attract the kind of foreign investment that it says it wants to attract.
So things are moving fast but slow at the same time.
That's right.
Well, Cardiff, Emily, thank you very much.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Cardiff Garcia is the U.S. editor for the Financial Times Alphaville blog. And Emily Parker, who joined us via Skype, is the author of Now I Know Who My Comrades Are, Voices from the Internet Underground. And I'm Charlie Herman. Thanks for listening.